This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Coronavirus continues to spread in mainland China and beyond. According to the latest figures, in China alone, more than 20,000 people have been infected and more than 400 have died. The virus has spread to 20 other countries, including the U.S., which now has 11 cases. Foreigners traveling, working, or studying in China have been advised by their countries to leave, and that includes some Middlebury College students who were expecting to spend a semester abroad. Junior Benji Renton is an international and global studies major focusing on East Asia. He's actually required to study abroad as part of his major, and he flew to China at the end of December. Though he was never near Wuhan, where the coronavirus originated, he and his fellow students found their travels cut short and were eventually instructed to return to the U.S. When I spoke with Renton yesterday, he had only been back in the country for about 48 hours, and he took us back to when he first learned of the coronavirus outbreak.
You know, we get a lot of alerts from Global Rescue, who's our Middlebury security advisor, and I had gotten an email, I think it was around January 15th, that there was a coronavirus, a couple cases detected in Wuhan. And Wuhan is a city that is near, it's kind of situated in the center of China, but it's 650 miles away from Beijing. And since China is such a large country, usually things that are, you know, in the south or you know, in other parts of the country usually could have no effect on the rest of the country. And so, you know, an earthquake, for example, you know, we get a lot of reports about earthquakes, and that usually has no effect on the way that we conduct our daily lives. And so we had first gotten that alert on the 15th, and to be honest, I really thought nothing of it. And it was really until the 21st when I started kind of really hearing about this on both Chinese media and Western media. And at that point, there were only around 314 cases of this coronavirus, that many of which were confirmed in Hubei province, where Wuhan is located. There were, you know, some scatterings of cases in Beijing and in Shanghai, in other larger cities, but Wuhan was really kind of the epicenter of the outbreak then. And so, you know, starting from the 21st until now, it's kind of snowballed into this larger, not only national in China, but a global issue. Through then, you know, the number of cases have spiked, and that's when it really started to get to a serious outbreak that we saw.
So what did it feel like to be in Beijing? Because you were called back to Beijing, and so you spent the last several days, maybe a week or two there. What did it feel like and seem like to be in that part of the country, and also to be a foreign national experiencing, you know, this sort of weirdness of, is my country going to repatriate me or what's going to happen?
The situation obviously changed very quickly, and I had traveled to Harbin, which is a city up in the north, with two of my classmates. We spent a couple days there until we were instructed by Middlebury to return to Beijing and kind of gather there while we were to await further instructions. And so we returned on the 27th of January. And at that point, schools were kind of indefinitely delayed in Beijing, and then, you know, basically extended nationwide. Temperature checks were put in place. The official Lunar New Year holiday was to be extended. And at that point, we started seeing some reports of evacuation flights, mostly from Wuhan, from the affected area. You know, I kept thinking to myself, there's going to be no mass exodus of foreigners from China back to their home countries. And to this date, there is still no forced repatriation, but that all changed kind of in the later days of January, when the State Department issued a level 4 travel warning and urged Americans to leave the country using commercial means. And as a result, we did that. You know, it never crossed my mind at the beginning, but, you know, that we were to be repatriated like that. But being a foreigner in China at the time, there's definitely a lot of fear. And I think I was really looking forward to spending New Year's in China. It was my first New Year's there in a long time. And New Year's is typically a very joyous holiday. For at least, you know, you have a New Year's Eve dinner, which we did. And then you, after the dinner, you spend the first 3 days of the New Year holiday visiting relatives, going back to your ancestral homes and doing a lot of these traditions. And it just seemed that people were kind of not doing that. And one of the major ways that we saw that is through the train system and through the Lunar New Year migration, which is the largest human migration in the world yearly, when essentially most of the country will leave where they're working and return home to their families, some of whom may live very, very far away. And so because of the virus, people were encouraged not to travel to their home, to their families, home for the New Year. And so many people chose to stay in the big cities where they were working. And so we kind of saw that in terms of, you know, when we boarded the train to Harbin, it's usually an all elbows ordeal to board the train. And that was no long, that was not the case that day. It was, we boarded with, you know, maybe a couple other people. And yeah, the train kind of filled up by the end, but it was really not, it was, you know, it was not the crowded trains that you all expect. And when the railroad company started offering free refunds on tickets, a lot of people chose to refund their tickets. And so because for Lunar New Year tickets, they often book out, you know, 30 days in advance. And so we had carefully planned every ticket that we had booked, but those trains quickly became empty and the train stations quickly became empty after that. And that was one of the major ways that I saw that this is a serious issue that people are actually taking note of, and they're changing their behaviors, and some of usually the most happy, the happiest time of the year, and they're changing their behaviors because of this.
Were you ever worried or scared for your own personal health and safety?
I personally was not. I told people, I said, you know, the chance of us contracting the virus is the same chance as the other 1.4 and sort of 1.5 billion people of contracting it. And so I think at the time, and still I think the chance of us contracting it was very low. Nevertheless, you know, we obviously practice the utmost, you know, health precautions, washing hands, which then turned into, you know, wearing a mask when going outside. And we practice the same precautions that, that our Chinese counterparts did. So, you know, the precautions, as I told a lot of people, they're not rocket science. You know, they're simple things that, that you can do, you know, washing your hands, wiping down surfaces, you know, ensuring that after you eat or use the bathroom or any of that stuff, you know, you continue washing your hands. And so we took those precautions, but I don't personally, I didn't think at any point that I was worried for my own health.
Benji, this isn't your first time in China. You've been many times. Can you talk a little bit about your background and your experience with Chinese and in China?
Yeah. So I that was I completed just now my 19th trip to China. I first moved to Hong Kong and I grew up there for 5 years. I first moved there in 2005 and stayed there until 2010.
And this is when you were a child?
Yes. This was when I completed first through fifth grade there. It was funny because, you know, when I moved to Hong Kong, it was the aftermath of SARS. You know, even 2 years after, the city still felt it. And in 2005, we had a minor bird flu epidemic. In 2009, we had a larger, which was then a global pandemic, the H1N1, the swine flu epidemic. And so all those kind of passed in the Hong Kong / China area when I was living over there. I remember, you know, during swine flu, my classes in third grade were canceled for 2 weeks. We had to do online classes. During my 5 years in Hong Kong, I took my temperature every day, and we had like a diary where we would write our homework and stuff like that. And every morning I would take my temperature, and put it in the diary for my teachers to see. And that was just kind of a routine, you know, every morning you wake up, take a shower, put the thermometer, and, you know, that's what you would do. And so the country has obviously learned from, you know, previous outbreaks, and, you know, many people would say everyone was comparing it to, you know, SARS or to previous kind of instances. But I think that this is kind of a different story. And for a lot of the members of the younger generation, you know, being a university student on a Chinese campus, you spend a lot of time with people among your age. You know, all of us had Chinese roommates, so they were local students at our local university who attend, you know, their own classes in Chinese, but they live with us. And so, you know, some of us would have conversations about, you know, current events, or, you know, which in the end turned into kind of this coronavirus. And so we were definitely able to learn a little bit about the Chinese perspective from them.
And is your level of fluency with Mandarin pretty high?
I would say so, yeah.
Yeah, so you're able to converse with people, and you talked as you were documenting your experiences about speaking, for example, with takeout drivers and how that was working when you were trying to get food. And there were other ways that you were sort of both experiencing this but also documenting it for others. And I'm wondering why you felt the urge or what it is in who you want to be and your plans that made you think, you know, this is something that I should be documenting, not just like for myself and my friends, but sort of more like either an anthropologist or a journalist.
Right. So I think part of it is kind of my background as a student journalist at Middlebury and, you know, working on you know, Chinese issues. And I think the other part, you know, was, I believe, to help those in the U.S., both, you know, my friends, family, and also it kind of the mailing list started, you know, it was initially a PDF that I would kind of screenshot each day and send it out to a couple people on, you know, on text message or social media or whatever. And then I started putting it on my blog because it got too out of hand. I would have to send to too many people. I send it to a lot of the people both at Middlebury in Vermont and at CET who were helping make the larger decisions for our programs, whether or not they would continue and what measures we would take. And I hope it was kind of helpful for them to see what it was from a perspective that may not have been reported in the U.S. media. Each night that I would do these updates, I would look at a fair amount of sources. I would look at obviously the U.S. media, but I also looked at Chinese media, both state media and media that's not necessarily state media, but it still has some state influence. And then also local alerts. So I would get alerts on my phone whenever a bus route was canceled or a train route was canceled. Or, you know, I used to work for a travel agency in China. So when tourist attractions were canceled, their operations team would be the first to know, and they would forward those messages on to me. So each day I would kind of look through these sources, and some were written in English and some were written in Chinese, which I feel enabled me to get a more complete picture of what was actually happening. And obviously a lot of it included my observations when I did go out, you know, especially in the earlier days. You know, I went to the train station or I went to other places, and I could actually see, you know, what people are doing and what was happening on the ground.
So it sounds like, you know, it was getting harder and harder to maneuver, and certainly it sounds like you weren't going to be able to do your studies as planned. So you were not ordered home, maybe, but sent home, and you were able to fly home. You arrived back on Saturday, is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
And where are you now? You're at your family's home in New York, right?
Correct.
And what's the plan now? You were supposed to be studying in China for the spring semester. Are you going back to Middlebury? Are you deferring your plans to study abroad?
On Wednesday morning, when the program was canceled, there were a couple options. Obviously, for Middlebury, we have not started our spring semester yet. So we, for me, and I think a lot of our other students who go to Middlebury, returning to Middlebury is a viable option. And that's what I will do. There are a couple study abroad programs that Middlebury operates in Latin America that have not started their semester yet, in Latin America and Australia. So I think, you know, that is an option for some students who want to take a completely different path. Taiwan and Vietnam are some other options. And some, I think, will choose just to take the semester off.
Well, Benji, I appreciate you talking with us, and I'm glad you're back in the U.S., and wish you luck with all of the decisions that you now have to make, and appreciate your time speaking to us.
Thank you so much. It was great to be here.
Benji Renton is a junior at Middlebury College and a student journalist. I spoke with him yesterday. Since then, he told us Middlebury College has advised all students returning from China to follow CDC protocol and wait at least 14 days before returning to campus.